That's just a good recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Solid. Right on.
And welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday, and how you doing, Connor?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Yeah, well, man, it's good to hear you doing all right, man. You know, late last week or was early this week, you and I both had, you know, some signs of being under the weather. You sound like you've recovered.
Now we're above the weather, so it's good. It's good.
Yeah, you know, just
outer space. Outer space. That's
crazy. So that's
way above the weather.
That's Friday, so that means my co-host Sandy Williams is in the studio. You know, is on the air. You know, Sandy is Friday with Sandy Williams. You know, on Monday, I was nasally. And here, yes. I am, and I think I've kind of fully recovered. And I'm really happy about that, man. You know, I had to take a COVID test, and it came back negative. So, you know, you're always happy when you find out you know. You know, I had this stuffy nose, and you know,
I'm particularly glad it came back negative because I was sitting 4 feet from you.
Well, so can you have both a runny nose and a stuffy nose at the same time?
Wow, this sounds like philosophy.
So I had all those things, sore throat. My sore throat is finally gone. And so I'm really excited about that. But Sandy, you know, I want to get right at it with you, man. I was reading this article in CNBC, which I guess is a site that talks a lot about business and investing and markets and all those things. And
well, CNBC is an all-day business news TV network.
Oh, okay. So why I was on that site, you know, only you and God knows, but I was on the site and right away, the first thing that caught my in front, you know, with all the other things, Sandy, that are on this site, there's so numerous, so much information about business and all those things on that site. Actually, first time I've been on there, marketing, all those things. And the one article that caught my eye immediately, Sandy, was this article called "A Catastrophe is Coming for the Economy, but it's not recession or inflation," says Secretary of Labor Marty Walsh. And Sandy, he began to go down a list of things that he really thought, especially in lieu of the fact that there's been a 2.6, you know, increase in growth.
The GDP, yeah, the GDP, yeah, went up 2.6%. Yeah,
which is with you being an economist, for lay people like myself, isn't that kind of strange in the face of all the other kind of news we're getting in the business community?
Well, they think the economists looked at it and say, well, that's a little bit of an inflated number because it seems to be affected by an unusual balance of payments surplus that we had, or at least an improvement in the balance of payments in the quarter that they were analyzing because of the strong dollar and the early impact of the strong dollar. In the long run, the strong dollar tends to have the opposite effect, which is to increase imports and reduce exports and possibly have a reduce the GDP. And so, but they're 2.6 did surprise economists, and they do believe that the next quarter will not have that large an increase in the GDP.
So can you explain to us, then, again, lay people, how the continued, cut or rise in the rate by the feds, the fact that Joe Biden is touting a $1.4 trillion pay down on the debt, Is this unusual territory, Sandy, that we're talking about? I mean, is this the way things normally go in this kind of climate?
Well, I mean, it's the normal government. The government response to inflation is to try and do things which will reduce the inflationary pressure. So the Fed has just a couple of tools, and the main tool they've got is to increase interest rates, and they're doing that. The increase in interest rates has obviously already had an impact in the housing market, because mortgage rates are up over 7% most recently, which is more than double what they were a year ago. There is a cooling off in the increase in prices in housing, and there's a belief that there could be an oncoming time when the price of housing will fall somewhat. And the pay down of the debt that's something that the government is able to do at this point, because they're running a surplus in terms of the kind of revenues they're receiving as compared to the expenses in the budget. So it's not a surplus, but it's an improvement in the level of deficit that is occurring. So all of those things tend to suppress inflation. Hopefully, I think what the real concern I had is that I think this inflation is shortage driven, and I think the Secretary of Labor might be dead on that a big part of that shortage involves the dislocation of labor and the shortages we have in labor for a whole bunch of sectors in the economy. The economy is slowing down. Unemployment is not rising, and that's unusual. Okay, so that is, and I think there's a belief that layoffs will be much slower to occur now, because this last period of layoffs was very painful. When the economy revived, all these people who laid labor off could not find the labor to replace those they laid off. So I think they're going to be reluctant to separate them. They'll be less likely to get divorced from their workers in the future than they were in the past.
You know, Sandy, he also, our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, he also talked about the fact that because of the labor shortage, same thing you've talked about for a while, people are moving around on these jobs and they're trying to move up the ladder. But the jobs that they're moving around to, Sandy, don't give them an opportunity with the lack of skill sets to move up the ladder. And it's causing even more problems inside of this business cycle, where people can't get stability in their workforces. And so his thought process is, hey, the only way around all of these things, Sandy, while we have this push and this debate about the border and all of these people waiting at the border, his thought is that the only way that this can be fixed, Sandy, long term, is that we fix immigration, and that both sides need to be working together, as opposed to this debate and argument about all of these people at the border trying to get in this country.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think George Bush II, one of the things that was good about his administration, and possibly had to do with his family circumstance, I think he was married to a Latino woman,
right?
Was that he was interested in getting a bipartisan solution to the immigration problem, because, you know, back then, the border was swelled with people who wanted to get into the country. We were trying to figure out the standards we were going to apply and just how we were going to do this. And I'm surprised that the employers of this country, who comprise in many respects the conservative side of the political ledger, are not actively working on solving the standards that we use for immigration, so that we can actually potentially increase the number of immigrants that come into this country in an orderly fashion. You know, the political discussion of this has come around to the point where the conservatives talk about suppressing immigration, trying to limit it, to reduce it, as if immigrants are coming into this country and taking jobs away from other people. Isn't the case at all. you know, from the employer's standpoint, immigrants are a very important channel that they have to potentially fill the jobs that are currently vacant. Now, the biggest employer in the country are small employers. And the small employers are the ones who are suffering these job shortages. Call up your heating, ventilating, air conditioning repair person and see if you can get someone to come fix your house. And they'll tell you, we're sorry, we're so short on people that we've really got a big backlog, and we'll get to you next month. All of that, it really relates directly to the immigration problem.
So let me read this quickly. Lack of immigration reform is a catastrophe in the making amid one of the tightest labor markets in history. Walsh said the political party's approach to immigration, getting immigration all tied up, is among the most consequential mistakes the nation can make in labor policy. One party is showing pictures of the border, and meanwhile, if you talk to businesses, the support confirms what you just said, that support those congressional folks, they're saying we need immigration reform, Walsh said. Every place I've gone in the country and talked to every major business, every small business, every single one of them is saying we need immigration reform. We need comprehensive immigration reform. They want to create a pathway for citizenship. The demographic data on the U.S. working age population, it's concerning, with baby boomer retirements expected to accelerate in the years ahead, compound by a peak being reached in high school graduation by 2025, limiting both the total size of the next generation labor pool and the transfer of knowledge between generations of workers. We need a bipartisan fix, or we're headed down a path of no return. Now we've got to go to a break, Sandy, and I want you to, you know, to respond to that on the other side. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That's Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. You can join us. We'll be right back. Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams, my co-host. And Sandy, I want to read this last paragraph quickly again that we were talking about before we went to break. And again, he is talking about the fact that the demographic data on the U.S. working age population is concerning, with baby boomer retirements expected to accelerate in the years ahead, compounded by a peak being reached in high school graduates by 2025, limiting both the total size of the next generation labor pool and the transfer of knowledge between the generations of workers. He predicts this to be a dire consequence if this is not fixed. And you say what, sir?
Well, I agree. I mean, I think that clearly developed economies, and we're obviously the most developed economy, have all had this problem of stagnation in population growth. And, you know, we are barely at or below replacement rate for indigenous. And by indigenous, I don't mean Native Americans. I mean the Americans who are currently residing in America. That group's population growth rate is not sufficient to fill the labor requirements. And for the last decades, it's been immigration that has brought the material level of growth in our population. And it's also been, it's brought to this country, you know, mature, trained, and ambitious people who have filled many, many jobs. And it's a shortage of these people, which is causing great problems for small employers in this country. And many of them are in the service sector, but it's clear there isn't a business you can talk to, just like this the labor secretary said, there isn't a business you can talk to that doesn't say that they've got the employees wanted sign out there hanging in the window and they're not finding the people they want or need.
You know, Sandy, but there are people who believe that that's because people just don't want to work. They don't want to face the fact that there just aren't enough people to fill a job. So how do you then, Sandy, begin to...
Well, there is, I mean, there always are dislocations of, you know, there are people who are unemployed and there are jobs looking for people. And that is always the case. And there's always going to be a dislocation of people from the people either capable or within the geography of the job who can do the job. And so, yes, if you say that, like, look, there's people looking for jobs and there are jobs to be had. What's the problem here? Those people must not be looking hard enough. That's basically economic ignorance. And it ignores the facts of the labor market.
You know, Sandy, 3.5% unemployment right now. They're saying full employment, right? 3.5% unemployment is basically what they consider to be.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And incidentally, most of the unemployed people are people who have sociological issues that kind of block them from being able to be capable of working in the labor market. And many of those people might reside in cities, and many of them might have essentially a developmental block, as it were, that keeps them from being able to be capable of operating in the labor market. That's an issue we need to deal with, because that also represents a block of potential workers, but they aren't currently capable of participating ably in the labor market. And quite frankly, what you're doing now with Voice of the Elders, I mean, there's a bunch of work we have to do in our society to make and to bring people into the economy in an able way. If we do a better job of that, we would not have to rely so much on immigration for a sector of the labor pool. But we should recognize that those people are not working out of their own volition. They're not working because of systemic problems.
You know, Sandy, the growth in businesses in this country, and which continues and will always continue, points out that, you know, we want to see businesses grow, right? We want to see people bring new businesses into this country, and even those developed inside of our country, and that's good for all of us. But common sense tells you, if we're already short along the line to fill the jobs that we already have, if you don't have the people to fill those jobs, Sandy, is it going to be possible for people to continue to build new businesses? I mean, long term, how do you get out of this?
Well, absolutely. In fact, you know, we can look at the transfer of jobs out of this country, and some of it had to do with cheap labor, but some of it had to do with the speed with which it was possible to implement new businesses in those other countries. You could go to China with a new product, one that you hadn't yet built, but that you needed to find a place for to manufacture it. You could accomplish that much more rapidly in China than you could in the United States. China had this ready pool of trained and willing and able workers, and they had the capacity to put up factories very quickly. And so part of the reason that a bunch of jobs migrated to China was the speed with which they could deliver the product needed, which was a manufacturing plant with workers.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Each new installation bore the imprint of our unquenchable thirst to say something of our own, in our own way, in our own voice, as best we could, the trends of the times be damned. Thank God we've still got musicians and thinkers whose obsession with excellence and whose hunger for greatness remind us that we should all be unsatisfied with mimicking the popular rather than mining the fertile veins of creativity that God placed deep inside each of us.
We go eye to eye to eye to eye. We go eye to eye to eye to eye. We go eye to eye to eye to eye. We go eye to eye to eye to eye.
Sandy, wake up. welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Hey, Connor, I mean, I love the music, but I was wondering if it was putting Sandy to sleep. It's Friday. It's Friday. My guest host, Sandy, co-host Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I'm just wondering, man, and what we just talked about is such a critical issue that is embroiled in the politics of today. And that if people really understood, and I don't know how we're going to be able, Sandy, to get this message, the true message to people. You know, it's one thing to say those people are at the border and we don't need them here, but if you don't understand the overall impact long term on the future of our country, then this is going to happen, right? I mean, it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, particularly when the people at the border are painted with this brush of being rapists and criminals, and you know, there's been such a malignment of the whole notion
and drug dealers.
Immigration. You know, immigration from the South is basically fraught with danger to this country. All of that is you know, clearly poppycock. I mean, there's obviously a kernel of truth that within those hundreds of thousands of people who want to get to this country, there are some who will commit crimes. If you take hundreds of thousands of Americans and put them in a room, some of those people are also going to commit crimes. So, we just have to get the debate recentered on facts. And hopefully, I've always hoped that business people would stand back as they do with their own business and look at their own businesses with cold, steely eyes instead of emotional kinds of thinking. And I'm wishing that those people would turn that same part of their brain on when they think about politics.
You know, Sandy, and so we'll segue into this. Can you show respect to MAGA Republicans for the sake of American democracy? We must try. Now, and you constantly talk about the fact that we need to be able to somehow have conversations with these people that, you know, constantly vilifying them is not going to be the answer. You know, to heal America, we need a generosity and courage of spirit that is incompatible with the notion of total war in our politics. Now, you constantly say that we've got to be able to have dialogue, and these MAGA Republicans, regardless of the things that many have said and the direction that they want things to go, we have to be able to understand that and accept that. And you know,
well, I'm not sure. Here's what I think we have to do. I think we have to try and understand it. I don't think we have to accept it. I think by understanding it and at least empathizing, by empathizing, I don't mean becoming sympathetic,
right.
But by being empathetic, you put yourself in the other people's shoes and try to figure out why do they think that way? Why do they feel that way? And what is it about what's going on that might be disturbing to them that we could affect? If we get in their shoes and really understand what they're thinking, and if what they're thinking is really so negative in its quality that we can't solve it, we have to try and re-educate them. Then I think we better get about that re-education program. I mean, I do think that a good deal of one of the problems we have, obviously, I think relates to tribal kind of fears, racial fears. And how do we work our way through that? Probably it's by breaking down the fear, by bringing people into contact with one another in a way which reduces the fear quotient.
Go ahead, Sandy. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, I heard a guy being interviewed on the radio, and it was about a book that had been written about I think it was whiteness versus democracy, and it was basically the concept that this racial tribal fear was enough to cause people to prefer autocracy over democracy. Their fear being that democracy was going to bring them into an environment and a society that would be in which the whiteness would lose control. And I started thinking about that, and I had sort of one of these epiphanies, you know, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but harking back to another Frenchman, I think we've all heard of Robespierre.
Yes.
And, you know, Robespierre was this character that participated in and came out of the French Revolution and was one of the leaders, was a populist leader and had the interests of the population in mind, it seemed. But when he got control, when the rabble, as the patricians looked at it, the royalty looked at it, when the rabble got control and Robespierre got control, there came the Reign of Terror, and hundreds of thousands of people were executed, and France fell into a very dark period. And ever since then, I think people who have read the history books have always thought that if we let the rabble get control, there Robespierre will appear. The rabble will essentially destroy what we have. And I come to believe that what we have in this country now is a fear of the rabble. We've always had this. Our Constitution was kind of drawn up so that property ownership would create a check and balance against the people who didn't own property from taking control of things. So the Senate, our U.S. Senate, was designed to more or less do what it does, which is to disproportionately represent states and to give people with property a little bit of an advantage with respect to how our legislation would get drawn up. And it kind of, when you think about it, it ends up explaining a lot of things. The elite and intellectuals are viewed as representing the interests of the rabble. And there's this fear that the rabble will get control of the United States and there'll be this bad outcome. What's interesting to me is that those people who have that fear are choosing Robespierre, i.e. Trump, from the get-go.
You know, Sandy, it does bring about the question then. We just got through talking about people who don't want to accept the reality of immigrants coming in and the importance of them, and yet we can't convince those people on the other side the importance of that. We can't get them to see the impact of that way of thinking, and so you just say, well, then what is it going to take? Because you just explained brilliantly And so did this economist, why this is critical to the future of our nation. And yet there are people who aren't going to even weigh in on that because they believe that these immigrants are coming here for nefarious reasons.
Well, it's fair. I mean, that's why I brought this up. It's fear of the rabble. So which immigrants are we afraid of? We don't seem to be afraid of Pakistanis who are electrophysiologists who will solve our heart problem.
Right.
And we aren't afraid of immigrants who come from India who will be our doctors. We aren't afraid of Asians coming to this country who will be employed in the establishment.
Scientists.
Well, I think scientists. The immigrants we're afraid of are the people who will be not a part of what we identify as the establishment. Establishment folks are fine. Those outside the establishment and under the establishment are sort of, again, I'll use this term, which is not really one that anyone else is using, this fear of the rabble. So the fear is that these people below the establishment who are not vested in the economy by dint of where they're stationed in the economy, these people will become so numerous that their votes, which of course are now trying to be
Democratic, are going to be Democratic.
Yeah. Their votes will be Democratic. That the Democratic Party is the party of the rabble, and that were they to become too numerous, the rabble will grab control of the country and will destroy it. In the manner of the French Revolution. So, and, you know, I'm exaggerating, but I really think that this is what it is. And to be honest with you, it sounds a little bit like class. You know, the people who are vested in the property class.
That is what it is, Sandy.
Yes, I'm afraid it is. And when I thought about it that way, I thought, wow, you know, I hate to think I'm a Marxist, but, you know, this is sort of what lots of philosophers over time have written about and described, and we might well be seeing it in this country right now.
So those people then are willing to see the country perish? Because, again, you already clarified that without these additional workers, those, you know, who are doing well, eventually, you know, if the rest of the nation is not going to be, you know, successful, the handful aren't going to be successful in the long run either.
Yeah, because quite frankly, you know, this question of racism, just as I was saying that we aren't fearful about the Pakistani who is an electrophysiologist, we're also not fearful of the black man who's been successful and is living in a fine house and has earned a lot of money. He's vested in the establishment. What we seem to be afraid of is a large group of people who are not vested in the establishment. What's the answer to that? The answer to this, let's get more people vested in this economy. Let's get people more gainfully employed. We've never been afraid of the middle class. And the middle class is the source of our economy, and the bigger our middle class is, the happier we are, and the more people, you know, the more people of color who are in the middle class, the less basis we would have for being fearful of people as the basis, as the result of their color, and so, you know, let's get on with it. Let's get our middle class fully participated in, but with people who are well trained and who are given the opportunities from the time of their birth to participate,
which is what our nation is supposedly founded on and supposed to stand for. Let's go to Tom from LA. Good morning, Tom. How you doing? What do you say?
Good morning. First off, we the taxpayers are the government, and we must never forget that. We must be holding our politicians accountable in this upcoming election. So go to soulstothepolls.wi.org. Make sure you're registered to vote. You get a ride to the poll if you need one.
Tom, we're getting close to
it. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Number two, I mean, all you have to do is look at 1964 when we had the most thriving middle class. When that happened, that's when the Reagan Revolution came along and wanted to stomp everyone down, make sure everyone was working, kill unions, do all that. So now that people are working so damn hard all the time, they don't have time to participate in We the People government. And that's part of the problem. The thing I don't understand is how the billionaire class can convince the people that are in the middle class to vote against their best interest. And I'd like to know why it is you think, Sandy, that that is. Is it Fox News? Is it right-wing hate radio? What is it that is making these people that are in the middle class vote against their best interest? Because I'll tell you what, my income is a lot closer to the person and the homeless person on the street than it is to the billionaire class. They don't understand my way of life.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. We've got to go to a break. Sandy, hang on. 844-967-2789. Sandy will answer it on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams, my co-host. Sandy, what do you say about what Tom has to say?
Well, clearly, people vote against their interests when they're frightened, you know, when they're frightened into thinking that something is endangering them, that blinds them to essentially the rational thought. And, you know, we've talked about that in the past. I mean, when you appeal to people's emotions, you block them from thinking it through rationally and reaching the conclusions that you would expect them to reach based on rational thinking. So, you know, what are the fears that are there being stoked? I mean, it has to do with tribalism in many respects. It has to do with this fear that I just described. So I can't get beyond that. I can't get into the heads of necessarily of the people who are thinking, other than the fact that it's clear that politics, particularly from the right, politics has been the politics of fear.
You know, Sandy, and so on the other side of it, I really do. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay. So on the other side of it, I really do. I listen to what is being said on the other side of this. I listen to people who, again, wanna act as if the presidency was stolen, and Ron Johnson today is even continuing to push that you shouldn't be voting in Milwaukee. They're gonna steal the votes, and you know, I mean, and yet there are people he has no foundation whatsoever to back that up, but he's still speaking and saying those things, and people are supporting him. Let's go to CJ quickly. CJ, quickly.
All right. Well, thanks for taking my call, Earl and Sandy. But the mere fact that you want to call it fear. We're living the democratic world right now. Your party controls everything. We're less prosperous. We're less safe around the world. The mere fact that we got fentanyl, 300 people dying per day, Sandy, and, you know, Afghanistan.
That's because of Democrats. The reason that fentanyl is happening is because, explain why. Yeah. Joe Biden and Democrats are the reason that fentanyl was going on long before Joe Biden got here. So explain that.
Well, because now it's exponential because of the open border. The you know, what police organizations, who do they support, Earl? Who does the Border Patrol believe?
Hang on a second. CJ, hang on a second. Did you hear what Sandy and I talked about the first part of this show? That if those immigrants aren't allowed to come into this country and we don't find a pathway for them to come in, the country is in dire straits.
There's a right way and a wrong way. There's a right way and a wrong way. You have no idea who's coming here now, Earl, period. This president opened up the border, CJ,
wanted him to come. CJ, did you hear us say, and this gentleman say, that they've got to find a way to work this out? That's what we're talking about, Sandy.
Yeah. What was the border was closed underneath the previous president.
A closed border.
It was down one-tenth.
Thank you very much for the call, CJ.
I believe in a border for the door.
CJ, thank you very much for the call. So Sandy, he's a prime example. He doesn't even, he's so blinded, he doesn't even see what this focus and conversation that we're talking about.
Well, because, you know, it depends on how you come at an argument. If you come at it with the bias of a political outcome, if what you're trying to do is elect a party or a person to office, and that's how you attack the problem, you're coming at it backwards, aren't you? I mean, the way to come at a problem is to analyze the problem and figure out which organization might be closest to finding the solution to the problem. So it biases the way you look at a problem and the way you discuss it. And that would be my problem with discussions with CJ is they start out with a bias of how you want to discuss the problem and how you want to analyze it. And it causes you to look at the problem differently. If you look at it by just trying to evaluate facts and not evaluate it from a partisan standpoint, you come to a different outcome. And that's why we need to get Americans talking to one another, not from the partisan viewpoint, but rather from the facts, from the facts.
So I agree with you totally on that, Sandy. We just saw with the call from CJ, as we always do, that's where it goes. But in this instance, if people don't understand that if we're going to keep speaking or coming at it from that perspective, it's not going to be solved.
And incidentally, CJ would say, well, I'm talking facts. No, the question is which facts? If what you try to do is just pick factoids that reflect and support the argument that you're trying to make to begin with. So, for instance, fentanyl. Fentanyl is obviously a huge problem in the country. And fentanyl has ebbed and flowed. Fentanyl has been building up. Incidentally, the biggest source of fentanyl for a long period of time, and I don't know what the case is right now, was China. It wasn't fentanyl from Mexico and Mexican immigrants. And I'm not sure there's any facts to support the notion that the influx of fentanyl that's causing all these deaths is coming over the border. But it's a factoid. And if what you're going to do is start an argument by finding factoids that support you rather than looking at the overall situation, you're not going to get anywhere.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. Sandy, we'll come back to you. We've got the guest from Health and Human Services, Milwaukee County Health and Human Services, and we'll come back to Sandy. Up next, 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into The Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.